Thank you, Virginia. I have my own story of experiential kinning. It happened long ago when I was out doing field work in the Adirondack Mountains in New York, in Maple Nation, while working toward a master's degree in plant ecology. I was walking around this hillside in an old-growth forest remnant looking for potential study sites when I stumbled across a rock. Well, a boulder, really. It's bigger than this thing. Like this part of Wisconsin, New York State has a lot of features that are the result of glacial activity. And one of the results of that is something called glacial erratics, these boulders and rocks that are scattered everywhere after having been dropped by retreating glaciers. So seeing rocks in the woods is not a particularly remarkable experience. But this rock was different. It had this pink cast to it, and there was something about its shape or the lighting or the background or something that made it really stand out. And so before continuing up the side of the mountain I was climbing, for no reason apparent to me at the time, I stopped. I sat down next to the rock, I let it support my back, and I closed my eyes. At first, I found myself just listening to the sounds around me, the leaves in the canopy above me softly rustling in the light breeze, the flying insects buzzing near the ground, and the burrowing ones just under the leaf litter. But then I began to sink into the experience of just being in the woods, not rushing off to find a study site. By myself, not hurrying, not even really thinking, I became aware of a knowledge that I think I must have always had, that I was part of the earth I was sitting on, and the rock I was leaning on, and the air surrounding me, and the sun making dappled light on the forest floor next to me. I don't know how long I sat there. I don't know what prompted me to open my eyes and get up and continue moving up the mountain. I do know that I felt refreshed and far more awake than I had been before I sat down. And I went back to that rock every time I had to visit that particular forest. And I found excuses to go there when I didn't have to. And I'll return if I ever find myself in that part of New York again. I was already deeply into studying how plants interact with each other and their environment, but this was the first real experience I had had of my own personal connection to a place, to a natural community, the first time my spirit moved beyond the academic work that I was doing. And so hearing Dr. Kimmerer's story now, decades later, gives me a name to this feeling, kinship. And it offers a verb for the actions that arose out of that experience. For me, the act of kinning, even back then when I didn't know to call it that, came in the ways that I've worked in forests and savannas and prairies to help them be healthier places in this world that fragments and commodifies them. Dr. Kimmerer said, "We become kin when we share gifts and can help each other out, just like members of our human family." The gift I received that day was a feeling of peace, of harmony with the earth, of connection with spirit. The gift I shared was the deeper commitment to working to preserve places like this forest on this mountainside, built out of relationship. And in the years that followed, there were times that my work took me in directions that were inconsistent with that commitment, like working for the Kentucky State Department that regulated surface coal mining, or for a consulting firm in Indiana that helped developers mitigate for impacts they made to wetlands. These jobs left me less than satisfied that I was doing something that served the needs of the natural world that I felt in kinship with. And I felt drawn then to volunteer for organizations that worked in conservation while I was in those times. I'm very grateful for the language that Drs. Kimmerer and Hausdorfer have given me to help me see that what I was craving in my paid work during those times was this act of kinning. some of our human siblings celebrated a thing called Darwin Day this past week. Some of us marked Valentine's Day on Friday. And tomorrow is National Random Acts of Kindness Day. For me, this idea of kin and kinning actually creates a connection between the themes of this week. Charles Darwin was a British naturalist who came up with a theory of evolution and several theories, five actually, about how it works in the mid-1800s. One of those theories was the idea of natural selection, this idea that there are slight variations among individuals within any given species. And these variations give those individuals the opportunity to adapt to variations in their environment. And over generations, that adaptation can create individuals that are different from the original, right? And from each other. If the adaptation is something beneficial that gives the individual that's different a better chance of survival in its current environment, then it has a better chance of producing offspring, which have a better chance of having the same adaptation and so a better chance of survival, and so on. At some point, perhaps, a new species evolves. And the original version, again, over generations, might die out or might find another place to live where its particular adaptations make it a better candidate for survival. The word that scientists use to describe how well an individual's adaptations suit the environment in is fitness. And the term survival of the fittest is a way to describe this process of natural selection. A lot of today's ecologists subscribe to the theory that one of the important drivers of how the fittest survive is competition. Competition, as you can imagine, is an interaction between organisms or species where both need resources that are in limited supply, and the same resources like food, or water, or territory. Ecologists believe that competition reduces the fitness of both the organisms involved, making them less able to survive in the environment where they're competing, since the presence of one reduces the amount of the resource available to the other. This makes sense. Any change in what's available in the environment that needs something to survive changes its fitness. But Dr. Kimmerer, in her most recent book, The Surfaceberry, Abundance and Reciprocity in the Natural World, promotes a different idea. She writes, "Ecologists are reevaluating the assumption that intense competition is the primary force regulating evolutionary success." Evolutionary biologist David Sloan Wilson has found the competition makes sense only when we consider the unit of evolution to be the individual. When the focus shifts to the level of a group, cooperation is the better model, not only for surviving, but for thriving. There's no question that all living beings experience some level of scarcity at various points, and therefore, that competition for limited resources will occur. But since competition reduces the carrying capacity for all concerned, that means reduces the ability to survive, natural selection favors those who can avoid competition. Often, this avoidance is achieved by shifting one's needs away from whatever is in short supply, as though evolution were suggesting, if there's not enough of what you want, then want something else. This specialization to avoid scarcity, deciding to being able to want something else, that specialization has led to a dazzling array of biodiversity, each species avoiding competition by being different. Diversity in ways of being is an antidote. Competition between individuals for success was long seen as the driving force in ecology, but that approach has been increasingly questioned and scientific evidence is mounting that mutualism and cooperation also play a major role, especially in changing environments. Mutualism, or reciprocity, exchanges create abundance for both partners by sharing. I have a whole other sermon about abundance and scarcity and their relationship. You might hear that next month. But fitness, so fitness might be more about an organism's or a population's ability to share resources than about competing for them. So with that thought, I'm going to make a leap from natural systems to human ones. In this world where resources are thought to be limited, promoting the belief that we have to compete with each other so that we as individuals might survive, in that world, those humans who are predisposed to sharing enhance the ability of our whole species to thrive. Or even, given the current state of our environment, to survive. It's a big thought. To pull it apart a little bit, I'll offer a little wordplay. The online English, Oxford English Dictionary says that fitness is a state or quality of being suitable, right? Something that fits is the right size or shape, or it's suited to the conditions or environment it's in. This is a lot how scientists are using it when they describe natural selection. In human systems, we use the word fit to describe how an individual resonates with a group. Shared values, interests, experiences, classes, races, hobbies, politics, education levels, career paths, family statuses are some of the ways that someone might find themselves a good fit in a group. And sometimes, a group might be so focused on specific ways an individual might fit that it misses the importance of a diversity of values and interests and experiences and life things. Like Dr. Kimmerer says of natural systems, we too can avoid competition by being different. And when we welcome and even seek difference and diversity in our groups, when that happens, the group as a whole actually becomes better resourced. Which also makes sense, right? The more people you have that can do a wider range of things or that bring a wider range of gifts, the more resourced we are. That's where kindness comes in. More wordplay, kin is the root of the word kind. And the online Oxford English Dictionary says that kin means people who are related or share a common ancestor. The word kind means both a group of living things that can be lumped together in some way, like a dog is a kind of animal, and having benevolence or good nature about something, as in be kind to others. So kindness means treating everyone, regardless of their kind, as kin. And one way to do that is to be kind to them. I think that's fun. That brings me back to the verb kinning and how it might help those of us who care about peace and justice push back against the individualistic competition that is being encouraged by our current administration. I think that kinning is how we put together the inspirations we get from the many things people are celebrating this week: change, love, and kindness. Kinning is actively learning about things both in the natural world and around the people around us, learning how we're related to them, and developing a resonance, a relationship. We begin to think of them as our kind, as kin, and we begin to treat them more kindly. We open the door to what Dr. Kimmerer called mutualism or reciprocal exchanges. And we find both the motivation and the ability to create abundance for all of us. When we're thinking of all of us as kin, we want to create abundance. And when we are acting as kin, we're able to create it. We move more easily into collaboration, and we find more possible ways to help us all thrive when we welcome those who aren't like us and they bring their gifts to benefit the whole. We learn what we each need to feel safe and to thrive across our differences. And we want to offer each other that safety and ability to thrive. As we do this, we grow our perception of who is kin. Our circles get wider and wider, so that we learn to want to spread that safety and ability to thrive out to hold more and more people who are further out than our immediate circles of groups. We stretch our own hearts in the process, making it more possible to think of wider and wider ranges as kin. So it's a cycle. And the word kinning begins to mean working to build a world where all can thrive. May it be so. May we be so.